The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It's Thursday, August 22nd, and we are here live and local in our WTBR studio this morning, and we'll be speaking today with Bob Dean. Bob Dean is with Berkshire Harm Reduction and also BCAC, does outreach for those organizations, and going to be talking about Overdose Awareness Day. That's coming up at the end of this month. On August 31st, there is another event on the 29th here, Standout in Pittsfield. And the program today is really just to raise awareness of the overdose, the opioid issue, and naloxone, Narcan as it's known. Other things we're going to be talking about for awareness and reduction of stigma for overdose. So all kinds of things we're going to talk about today. I know Bob's been on the show many times in the past, and it's always good to catch up and find out how we're doing on this front, because certainly it has been an issue that has been a difficult one for this area, as it has for many areas. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. First, let's get to the weather forecast and find out what we have in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny. Highs in the lower 70s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then becoming clear. Lows in the lower 50s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, sunny. Highs in the upper 70s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Well, sounds like a nice couple days out there. We deserve that to get near the end of the summer here. We've only got a week before school's back in session. Oh, my goodness. That happens so fast, isn't it? The summer always just goes by, and then the winter just drags on and on. So enjoy it while you can, folks. And Labor Day weekend is not far around the corner either. All right, welcome back to Morning Drive. Morning Drive is on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. And joining me today is Mr. Bob Dean. Bob, good morning. How are you?
I'm great, Sean. How are you today?
I'm doing okay. Got to grab that mic and pull that a little closer for you.
And thank you for sending that good weather our way.
Yeah, right. Hey, anything I can do. I'll take credit when it's good. So welcome to the show, and glad you could come on to update us on this very important issue for our community. Overdose Awareness Day, it's obviously a day put there so that we can think about this issue. It's easy to kind of stuff it back into the corner and not think about it when you don't have to. But this is an issue that has persisted in our community for a number of years. Give us a quick overview of what has happened in this area. You know, from the start of the oxycodone issue, where that was being overprescribed, and how that has changed the entire scene here and the emergence of fentanyl and everything.
So looking back in 2010, in all of Berkshire County, there were 4 fatal overdoses.
2010, so 14 years ago.
Which, you know, at the time, that four is too many.
Yeah.
Even one is too many, of course. So when, and that began to increase. So by the time we got to 2020, which of course was, you know, also the start of the pandemic, that number of 4 fatalities had increased to 56.
Okay, so
in 2020. Huge
increase.
It had gone up significantly, and it continued to go up, so that in 2021 in Berkshire County, there were 62 overdose fatalities. We began to turn that around, and it was certainly a community-wide, Berkshire County-wide effort. And so the last couple years, we've seen significant increases. We went from that 56 and then up to 62, down to 48 in 2022 and 49 in 2023. So we're certainly heading in the right direction.
And those are the fatalities. So
those are the overdose fatalities.
So it's not counting the total number of people who have overdosed and maybe come close to dying.
Correct.
This.
It does not count those. And as we were saying before the show, my sense, and you know, from talking with people that are familiar with, you know, with this world, is that we are seeing a lot more overdoses today than we did maybe in 2019, even 2020 and 2021, when you had those high fatality numbers. We're seeing a lot more overdoses, but because we have fentanyl so much more readily available, people have it and are able to reverse a lot of those overdoses so they don't become fatal overdoses.
Yeah.
So why are we seeing so many more overdoses?
My thought was, as you were describing those dates, some of the big increases coming in and around the pandemic time period, right?
Yeah. A lot of people maybe for the first time began to use opioids, or maybe if they'd been doing well with the isolation and everything and the stress of the pandemic, they might have had a setback. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot because recovery is not a straight line. Typically for anyone in recovery, whether it's alcohol or it's a substance such as heroin, fentanyl, they may have a few steps forward, a step back, a couple steps more forward, maybe a step back. So it's important really for people to realize if you have been using fentanyl and then you've stopped, even for a couple of days, your tolerance goes way, way down. And if you go back out and use that same amount, you can have an overdose.
Mm. So let's take a step back here for a minute and talk about opioids in general. So we're talking about a class of narcotic of drug that includes things like heroin and prescription drugs such as hydrocodone, oxycodone, and then fentanyl, right?
Yep.
And so it seems also like there's an intensity difference.
Yes.
And it also in terms of the traditional, like I think of heroin, as you mentioned, been around for decades.
Yep.
It's not something that's new to any population in general. It's been a problem for many, many years, even centuries, you could say. But certainly decades, the potency of the drug has increased to the point now where, and fentanyl, of course, puts it really, really over the edge, wouldn't you say?
It's unfortunately, it's readily available. Mm. And yes, when we're able at Berkshire Harm Reduction to test a small sample of what somebody has used, we're finding that there's very little heroin in the heroin. It's almost all fentanyl or fentanyl and heroin. Mm. And we're finding probably 75% of what we test also has xylazine in it, which is a veterinary sedative, extremely powerful. And that the naloxone has no effect on the xylazine. So going back, probably, you know, starting with maybe 2010, you know, you had certainly, you know, the OxyContin was still readily available. A lot of people maybe were starting with that. You know, we hear the story, the white middle class high school soccer player maybe started with something prescribed because they might have had an injury.
Yeah.
And, you know, you end up liking it because, let's face it, what opioids do is they diminish our perception of pain and they give us a feeling of euphoria.
Yeah.
And
a certain percentage of the population is more susceptible to becoming dependent on the substance. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. Some of us just,
It's not that everyone, I think it's like 90%. I don't know what the exact number is, but there are certain people that if you take it a couple times, you're going to become dependent. Whereas other people might not be, and that's what a genetic thing potentially.
It's genetic. It's a physical thing. It's very easy, for instance, to rewire our reward system. And I'm not a medical person, but I'll keep going.
Yeah,
it's very easy, from what I've been told by medical people, to rewire our reward system, and so people begin to want the heroin, begin to want the fentanyl, and then you get to a point, you know, with your body that you have to have that, because substance use disorder is a disease. There was a time when we would consider it, whether it was, you know, heroin, fentanyl, alcohol, it's a moral weakness kind of thing. But now, you know, the science and the medical world are telling us this is a disease. And as you said, Sean, some people are more susceptible to it than others. But also other people who maybe aren't initially susceptible to it, if they continue to use it, or based on somebody's, you know, growing up experiences, their adverse childhood effects, other things like that, trauma, you know, that may cause somebody to begin to use, and it may continue to give them enough rewards that they continue. And before you know it, your body needs it. You have You have a need for it just to feel normal during the course of a day. And that's part of why when people are trying to stop, it's so hard, because you have to, over time, rewire your thinking and your reward system so that there are other things that are more that give you more of a reward than drinking or injecting or using a substance.
And it must be also that at that point, once you are sort of controlled by that substance, your brain is rewired, as you said, to need it, to keep needing it. It's very difficult to just pull yourself out of that, right? And I think there's a stigma about, you shouldn't have started using in the first place. And there's, as you said, many reasons that people might have started. And so, it's easy to judge until you're in that person's shoes. But then the next step is getting help getting off of that.
Yes.
And somehow resuming a normal life that's good for you and good for your family and good for society.
All those things. And I used to help co-facilitate support groups with an individual. And one of the things that he would say to the groups that I thought was great, again, speaking of his own experience, was that he now has more reasons not to use than he does to use. And that takes a while because, again, it's a powerful disease, and it becomes, for many people, that it's what they need. It's all they need. It's all they think about. And as a result, they can do some terrible things, neglecting family, kids, all of those things.
Yep.
But I also have seen so many people that are in recovery and are feeling good about themselves and are giving back. Like so many people I've seen, that are now working in the field and are counselors and helping others and helping to save lives. Mm-hmm. So it's not an easy road, but it's a road that can be traveled, and there is a lot of support out there. And people in the field know that it's not a straight line. So people understand that if you do have a setback, try to keep it as short as possible. Try to be as safe as you can and get back to whatever's working for you in terms of not using.
Yeah. Now let's talk about the other dangers that are out there for people who may think that they're all right, and I think that they're go to the sort of culture of recreational drug use, if you will.
Yep.
And that has, again, been in our culture for many, many years, decades, is nothing new. But the fact is that there might have been a time when people could have, done certain substances and said, okay, I can manage this. Whether they could or not is another thing. But now with fentanyl, and tell us about why the emergence of fentanyl, this very, very powerful opioid, getting into all of these other substances where people might not know what they're taking when they're taking it. That's been the real big change, right?
Yeah. So say, for instance, heroin. Up until maybe 2010, it seemed, heroin was primarily, the opioid of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And heroin's 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine, which is offered frequently for medical purposes.
Right.
Fentanyl is 50 times stronger than heroin.
50 times stronger.
So you're dealing with an incredibly powerful opiate, and it's cheap to make, so that's why it's so plentiful.
Hmm.
Whereas heroin,
it can be manufactured.
Yeah, heroin.
It doesn't have to be grown. It doesn't have to be cultivated. It can be made in a lab.
Correct. Heroin's from the poppy plant and all that stuff, and that takes time. Fentanyl is cheaper to produce and it's stronger.
Mm.
So people are developing a desire for that, which becomes a need once they start to use it. The other thing about fentanyl is it gives you a high of 2 to 4 hours, whereas heroin, the high is maybe 6+ hours. So as a result, people are using more fentanyl more frequently because they want to get back to that place that was giving them the euphoria, diminishing, whatever perception of pain they may have, all of that stuff. So we're seeing people injecting fentanyl more frequently. And also we're seeing now that in almost everything we test, there's that xylazine, the veterinary sedative. So that will keep somebody still in a sedated state, even if you're able to reverse the opioid overdose with naloxone. So
But the real problem seems to be that these substances are in other things that people maybe not suspecting.
Yes. Okay.
In pills, in
correct.
Other things where they think they're doing one thing and they're getting something else.
Yep.
And now you're causing an even bigger problem you didn't even know.
So here's, and I like this line. This is from the notice of that August 29th standout that Berkshire Harm Reduction, Berkshire Overdose Addiction Prevention Collaborative and City of Pittsfield and community are participating in a week from today down at the Park Square.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things it says here is they're holding a standout to increase the awareness of the risk of overdose, particularly the growing presence of fentanyl in cocaine and counterfeit pills.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were saying, Sean, that's where people are particularly at risk, because if they're not using or have no intention to use fentanyl or heroin or any opioid, but it's in something that they are using, they have no tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a recipe for an overdose.
Yeah, and a quick one as well, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's something
yeah.
where you could find yourself in quite the emergency situation where you didn't realize.
And if you're unprepared in the sense that you're not expecting this, you don't have naloxone and things like that, that could become the fatal overdose. So anytime, mm-hmm. if something seems amiss, we're encouraging people, call 911 and
mm-hmm.
just say there's somebody here, they're not responding, they're not breathing, I don't know what's going on, but they're not breathing, and you know, just get help. And no matter what it would be. The other thing that when we're able to test stuff at Berkshire Harm Reduction, people have brought in a little bit of like a counterfeit crushed pill, like particularly Percocets, you know, fake counterfeit Percocets that we've tested, and we've found fentanyl in those. And so again, and I think those are kind of popular at the college, the high school type of crowd. So you've got people out there that are at risk and may not even realize, you know, that they are at risk. Other things that put somebody at a risk of an overdose, if you're misusing prescription meds,
mm-hmm.
Whether intentionally or maybe you forgot you took your morning dose, you're double dosing, and then if you're mixing substances, so if you know you have a prescription med and maybe you're drinking and you're doing other things, and then if you're putting another opioid in your system, that could be an overdose.
Mm-hmm.
Again, people who have lower reduced tolerance, somebody who's even stopped for a few days, if they go back out and use the same amount, that can be an overdose.
Yeah. We're speaking with Bob Dean, by the way, if you're just joining us, with Berkshire Harm Reduction, and we're talking about the upcoming Overdose Awareness Day, that's right, which is happening on August 31st, with a standout here in Berkshire County at Park Square on the 29th of August, so a week from today, 12 to 1 p.m., and that is from Berkshire Harm Reduction and the Berkshire Overdose Addiction Prevention Collaborative. That's a mouthful, but B-O-A-P-C.
BOPC.
BOPC, okay. And so let's talk about Narcan, because you brought that up.
Yes.
And it's, I think back only a few years ago, there were some debates and discussions about whether fire departments should have Narcan on board, or if ambulances should stock it, right? I mean, we were at that point where they were debating that. There's no debate anymore. Narcan is and should be pretty much everywhere and easily available, right?
Yes, absolutely, because it really has one purpose in its life, and that's to rapidly reverse an opioid overdose. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try to hold this up again.
For our radio listeners, Bob is holding up a box. Looks like an ordinary prescription, kind of a cardboard box. Says Narcan on the front of it. And he's going to be opening that up for us and showing us what that is.
And we have 78 Nalox boxes throughout Berkshire County now that have this Narcan in it, have these boxes in it. And we are encouraging people to take it, take it today. When you don't have an emergency, so that if there is a situation that comes up, you'll have Narcan with you, just like you have a spare tire in the trunk of your car, just in case.
So if you see one of those Nalox boxes around the community, and actually there's one right here in the lobby of the PCTV and WTBR studios, that's for you to go and take a box and keep it with you.
Yeah.
Right? They're free. No one's going to be asking you for anything for it.
Correct.
No one is even going to approach you to ask you why you need it. You can just go to the box. You can take a Narcan box out and take it back with you.
And the Narcan has no side effects. It doesn't get somebody high. It doesn't do anything except rapidly reverse an opioid overdose. And I'm going to open this one. This one, as we had talked, has already been opened.
Yep.
The naloxone in it is expired. So I'm going to open it and just take it out, and hopefully I can line it up so people can see. This is what naloxone is. And it's really this simple. It's a nasal mist. And what it does is it goes up through the membranes of the nose or the anus. You don't put it in your mouth or your ear. And it goes up through those membranes, and it, when it gets to the brain, it kicks the opioids off of the brain receptors, and it attaches instead. It's like the best soccer goalie you've ever had. As long as it's working, 30, 60, 90 minutes, those opioid, they can't reattach. But they don't.
During that time.
During that time, but they're still there. The Narcan doesn't eliminate the opioids.
So
it kicks them off, and so
gives you precious time to to save someone's life.
That's a great way to say it. It gives you precious time, and if the person doesn't get help and they have enough opioids in their system, when the Narcan wears off, that person could have a second overdose. That's why it's important to call 911. And also,
you really have no idea how much opioid is in someone's system.
Yeah, and plus with the Xylenol, even when the Narcan's doing its job, the xylazine will keep somebody still in that sedated state, because that's what it is. It's a sedation.
And the Narcan doesn't affect the xylazine. That's
correct.
The interesting thing, right?
Correct.
So it's a complicating factor, if you will.
Yeah. So I'm going to now open this. Yeah. Let me
go ahead. Yeah, so I've got another camera on you.
Okay, great. This is as easy as it is to open. And now it's ready to use. And you hold it like this, and then you would put it into the person's nostril with their head back, because again, it's a mist, and it goes in and it kicks off the opioids from the brain receptors and attaches instead. So I'm going to now set it off so people can see just how simple it is. This would be inserted into the person's nose with my fingers there, so you don't put it in too far. And I'm going to count to three, and then I'll set it off. One, two, three.
That's it.
That's it. And as you can see, the little red button now has stayed up. So when you take this out, you don't want to test it. You don't want to prime it, because you have what I call one push to use it. But it's very effective. And really, it can save a life. So hopefully, whatever discussions were going on about whether people should have this on their person, whether organizations like yourself should have it in the lobby. Thank you for being a leader in that area. Those conversations should be really, really small at this point, because the facts, the medicine and the science are telling us this saves lives, and it doesn't get people addicted. It doesn't do anything other than save a life. And you know what? You're not enabling somebody who's lying on the ground and not breathing by giving them Narcan. You're saving their life.
Yep. They're giving them one more chance, essentially, right? Yeah. And you can't help anyone who has already passed away. You have to save the person, and then you can go and work on the other stuff. But you can't do anything once the overdose takes hold.
Yeah. Whatever, you know, even if that person is somebody who has no desire at that point to consider stop using, it's still, this is a person. This is Sean. Let's save Sean today. And it's that simple, really, at least in my mind.
Yeah.
So we've got 78 of these now. This, since we put the first one up in March 2023, we've had, I think, 6,000 of these kits have been taken by the community and have either been used to help save a life or are available for somebody to have and to use if they come upon a situation. And I know there's a lot of people that say, "Oh, I could never do that. I don't think I could do that." You know what? That's okay. Take the Narcan, have it with you. If you come upon a situation, call 911. There's a person here who's not breathing, who's not responding. Maybe there's someone else there who's familiar with the Narcan and would be comfortable using it, but they don't have any. But if you can offer yours, or maybe they have one kit, and it might be a case where the person needs more than one. Because what you do is you would insert that and then apply it through one nostril. You wait 3 minutes, and then you would do the other one through the other nostril if the person's not breathing regularly, and you can continue to do that. How many Narcans can you give somebody?
Yeah, well, it's a good question.
It's not going to hurt the person if you give them too much. What's going to happen is it will begin to drip out their nose because it's just backed up. But it does, again, it doesn't have negative side effects. It's almost like a miracle medication. And it's been around since the 50s.
Is that right?
Yeah, this is not a new medication.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So this has been around that long, and yet now it's finally getting to the point where people are realizing that it's can help in these situations.
And it's also, this is 4 milligram. There was a time, it seems like even less than 5 years ago when it was 1 milligram. Ah. But again, because the supply is, you know, the fentanyl is so potent, this has had to, you know, also increase. So signs of an overdose. Basically, it's somebody who's not responding and doesn't seem to be breathing, or if they are breathing, they're breathing so poorly, so shallowly that, you know something's not right. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be somebody that's going to be all running around or anxious or agitated. It's going to be somebody who really is simply not moving.
They're out of it.
They're out of it, yeah. And so what you would do is you would try to see if you can get them to respond to you. Mm. Sean, can you answer me? Sean, you're not looking so well. Mm. And if they don't respond there, what people who use tell me is that, you know, you could say, well, if you don't respond to me, you know, I'm going to have to Narcan you. That's very effective for people who are really, really high and, you know, and don't want to be bothered. But if they hear that, they may respond to you if they can. So a lot of times, if based on how long somebody has been with the overdose and not breathing well, you know, the fingertips might begin to turn blue, the lips. Mm. But the big thing is the person just doesn't seem to be breathing, or they're not breathing well enough, and you know you can tell, and they're not able to respond to you. So call 911. There's somebody here that's not responsive. There's somebody here not breathing. And then if you have Narcan or you feel comfortable, just like I just showed, just apply the Narcan, and you can do rescue breathing between the Narcan doses. You can do chest compressions, but do whatever you feel comfortable doing. At the very least, please call 911. Don't just leave somebody there lying, potentially dying on the sidewalk.
Seems simple enough to be able to do. And again, when you can hear these words now, this is sort of why Bob is here today talking about this, so that we can get people to understand what the procedure might be like in case you run into it.
Yeah.
You know, you might find yourself in that situation. And then also, there isn't any harm with using Narcan on someone who maybe is having some stress, but it isn't an overdose, but you don't know it's an overdose.
Correct.
Or it isn't an overdose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In other words, if someone's having some other issue and you think it looks like an overdose, you give them Narcan, not going to hurt them.
Correct. And a lot of times we're hearing from the professional first responders, the EMTs, that they come on a situation and they're coming on it cold, that's one of the first things that they may do as they're ruling things out, because as you said, Sean, it doesn't have negative side effects. So for instance, for us, you know, lay people, if we see somebody, you know, that doesn't seem to be doing well and they're not breathing, and we Narcan them and it turns out to be a heart attack, as you said, we're not hurting them at all.
Yeah.
That's why it's important to call 911, because we simply just don't know what's going on with somebody.
Right.
And there's so many different things that people are mixing in with the heroin, fentanyl, xylazine.
Yeah. It's kind of a crazy time in a lot of ways. However, it's also good that there are some options now.
Yeah.
And there are some, the efforts like Berkshire Harm Reduction is doing to make a difference. We're going to talk about how that has changed in the last couple of years with this program, and how the numbers are starting to trend in the right direction. It's by no means over. We're not through the crisis by any means, but it's good to see some progress, and that's where things are headed for sure. Bob Dean is my guest here this morning from Berkshire Harm Reduction, talking about Overdose Awareness Day on August 31st. That's next week, and there is a standout at Park Square next Thursday, a week from today, from 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. out at Park Square in Pittsfield, and you'll get a chance to voice your support for that. And just, again, your overall raising awareness of this very important issue. We're going to talk to Bob again in the second half more about this topic and some of the other options and treatments that people have. Narcan is an emergency treatment, and it's something that provides time, as we talked about, and saves a life. And there are other issues once someone is back among the living, shall we say, where you can say, come back and say, you know, okay, what do I want to do here? I've got this problem. I can, you know, either keep going down this road, or I can make change. And that's what we're going to talk about in the second half. Let's go to our top of the hour break if we can. And we'll be right back after this Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM.
For more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
It's a revolution!
Yeah, baby, yeah! 89.7
WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal, opportunity grows here, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
PCTV Select is a great way to watch local content without having a cable subscription. You can keep up with the latest of what's going on in your community from anywhere in the world. And it's available for free right now. Watch live events in full HD on your TV, on your computer, or on the go with your mobile device. Or watch our large library of on-demand video programs anytime that's convenient for you. No more waiting until it's on TV. Did we mention it's free? PCTV Select is everywhere you need to be.
The Pittsfield Health Department is hosting monthly wellness clinics available to the community at the Christian Center, Senior Center, Epworth Arms, Capitol Square, and South Congregational Church. Vital sign checks, medication reviews, and health assessments are offered by the public health nurse. Our social worker will be there with information of available resources as well. For more information about these clinics, please contact us at 413-499-9411.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions. Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings, and screen rooms. Customized solutions available online at Sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning. We're live and local in our WTBR studio, and we are speaking with Bob Dean from Berkshire Harm Reduction and also from BCAC. He does outreach for those organizations. We're talking about the opioid crisis and Narcan and other things along those lines. And, of course, August being International Overdose Awareness Month. I will get that right. There is an Overdose Awareness Day, apparently, but the entire month of August, which is almost over, is International Overdose Awareness Month. So we're talking about that to raise awareness and to reduce the stigma also. And we're going to talk about that a little bit in this half hour. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny. Highs in the lower 70s. Northwest wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, then becoming clear. Lows in the lower 50s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, sunny. Highs in the upper 70s. West wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
You can always tell we're going to have a nice day when the weather forecast is done before the music stops playing. The longer forecasts are just, you know, we run out of music to play behind it. So nice day today, nice day tomorrow. Good couple of days to enjoy the late summer weather before we get into fall and all the other stuff. A lot of people say September is their favorite month for weather around the Berkshires. I can understand that to a certain extent, but I still like summer, even if it's hot and stormy and, you know, everything else that comes along with it. I just like summer. What are you going to say? All right. Welcome back, Bob Dean, this morning. Thanks for being here and talking about this very important topic. And we talked about the distribution of Narcan and all of the various Naloxone boxes that are around to help stop an overdose. I guess talk about stigma for a moment and how far we've come in the past, you know, even 10 years, but 20, 25 years. And I think some of the preconceptions for addiction dependency, if you will, on substances. It's starting to evolve and change, but it takes a long time for that to do that, for people to let go of those preconceived notions about what addiction is.
Yeah, and I think that's true, Sean. I mean, we haven't come far enough, but we are making progress definitely, so that a lot of people in the community that are what might be considered mainstream community are now wanting to learn more about what's happening. I, for instance, have done a lot of overdose awareness presentations at local libraries, as well as, you know, local businesses, human service organizations. And the unfortunate reality, as you said, is this is affecting all of us. We may not know that someone we know is struggling, but we all know people, unfortunately, who are, and they can be family members, you know, children, grandchildren, parents, siblings, and this is an equal opportunity destroyer of lives, and it affects all of us.
Yeah.
But there is more of a willingness to learn about this, to learn what naloxone is and what it isn't. There, you know, as you had said earlier, there were a lot of preconceived notions about that. And a lot of times when I show people what it is, and they go, that's all it is. It's just a mist. And people don't get high from it. No, it's a one little purpose, and that's to rapidly reverse an opioid overdose. I think there's also certainly, you know, there's been tremendous strides in the medical scientific world to be able to now identify that substance use disorder is a disease.
Yeah, that seems to be the big change in thinking, right?
Yeah.
Is that, as you said before, it was considered a personal failing that somehow you just were not, you were morally, you know, bankrupt or whatever. You just, you were othered, right? Yeah. That's what people did to people that had an addiction or a dependency on a substance. And now we're starting to realize that, no, it's really a disease is something, as you said, that rewires the brain, and it needs to be solved, to be cured, or to be treated.
And so when somebody wants to begin to explore treatment options, recovery options, and again, some people never may want to do that, and that's their choice. Mm-hmm. But when some people do want to explore it, there are a lot of different options. And a lot of times, again, as we were saying earlier, you know, it's a couple steps forward, a step back, and it also may take time for somebody to find what works for them. Some people like, you know, the support group and actually being, you know, in a residential program to start. For other people, being on medicated assisted treatment so that they can take a medication, you know, daily that helps to reduce the urges, the very real physical urges that, you know, that the opioid is having that person go through. So there are a lot of different options, and unfortunately, you know, there aren't enough residential programs and all of that, you know, for the needs we have, but there are some good ones out there. There's some good ones in Pittsfield. You also have now in Great Barrington, North Adams, and Pittsfield, there are all recovery centers where people can go. And they have what are called all recovery meetings. So it's no matter what somebody's substance use challenges may be, it can even be family members going and things like that. And basically just talking about what's going on with you today. And all are welcome. So even somebody who's still actively using, you know, can go and share. And so for many people, that can be a start to recovery. But the thing is, what I've learned from people who are in recovery and the professionals that are helping people in recovery, is you keep trying. You know, there are going to be setbacks, but just keep trying. And ultimately, hopefully, the setbacks become shorter and shorter, and there's much longer time between the setbacks when that person is not using is in recovery, and those become longer and longer and longer. And before you know it, you maybe have a month, then a year, and then 5 years. But the other thing I've learned is you got to keep your guard up. You can't let your guard down, because there are always triggers out there. For me, it's, you know, hearing the Red Sox on the radio that triggers me back to, you know, when I used to drink. Like, that's to me is like, not that I'm going to act on it, but that's a trigger for me.
Yeah, interesting.
A potential trigger. And so for others, there are, you know, it's a place, it's a person. And a lot of times when somebody's doing really well, they've been maybe in a program for a certain number of, you know, overnight for a certain number of days, maybe 30, and then in a residential program. But if they go back out and they're going back to the same group they hung around with and all of those things, that's potentially a setup. If you've got people that are, you know, your friends are still using, maybe you need to stay away from those friends for a bit. And that's hard.
Yeah. I would think having a really strong support network is important in those situations, because it must be hard to do it alone, to have that strength to just say, oh, these people, this situation, this trigger, whatever is bad for me, I've got to walk the other way. And it doesn't happen automatically, right? You need someone to, you know, help guide you sometimes.
Yeah, and there is that type of support out there, whether you find it from going to support groups or you have a sponsor or however you set it up. But again, as you said, so somebody who kind of knows some of what you're going through. Mm-hmm. Everybody's path is unique, but somebody who's experienced some of the challenges and knows what it's like when you just feel there's no way I can resist today. Yeah. But you know, one of the things I've learned, you know, for myself is, you know, I don't drink today. Maybe I'll drink tomorrow, but tomorrow we'll leave till tomorrow. Just don't do it today.
Mm-hmm.
And
works.
And tomorrow
said,
never comes.
Right. Yeah. So, and everyone has a different strategy, something that works for them, for their own situation. And as you said, I think of people that have had to get off of tobacco as an example, nicotine, another very addictive substance, right? Dependency on smoking nicotine. And it also rewires the brain. And people that have quit smoking decades earlier, 10, 20 years, still have every once in a while in their mind that pang, right? They know that they can avoid it because they've been doing it for so long. But just the fact that it's got its hooks in you for so long, it's just really amazing how a substance like that can change your mind.
It is, and I'm a former smoker as well. And yeah, you're right. There are certain situations that, you know, you just all of a sudden, like, you're automatically, I don't do that anymore, thank God.
Yeah. and like every habit, a bad one or a good one, it takes time to build.
It does
even
take
good
time.
Habits and changes to your daily, you know, the things that you do all the time and the way that you do things, it takes a while to build it up.
Yeah. And unfortunately for people, you know, with substance use challenges, you know, they may have done a lot of damage to family relationships and all of those things. And those take a long time to rebuild, but they can be rebuilt. And, you know, to the family members out there, you know, who have probably gone through so much and have been, you know, discouraged for so long, you know, they're entitled to feel what they feel. You know, we're all entitled to, you know, to how we feel about something. So, you know, family members, don't beat yourselves up if you just feel we're not ready to do with this person just yet.
It must be hard, actually, because, you know, you put your faith in a procedure or a method of helping your loved one, you know, get rid of this controlling substance. And as you said, people will fall and they'll get back up and they'll start again. And it must be difficult to have, you get skeptical, right? After a while, you say, is this really going to work? You got to stay on that path and say, eventually this is going to work. That's, you have to have that hope.
Yeah. Right? Well, and I think, you know, hope, that pretty much sums it up. You know, it's important, I think, to have hope and to be hopeful. And you know, I'll be in places where I've seen people that are doing pretty good here and there, and then I'll go to, clinical stabilization services, which is a 30-day program, and I'll see somebody there that had, last time I saw them a couple months before, they were out in the community doing all these cool things, and now they're here, and they'll just, like, they're embarrassed, and they're ashamed, and, like, my response is, hey, you're where you need to be, good for you.
Yeah.
You know, it takes guts to come back here.
Right.
And good for you for doing that, because, you know, you're worth it.
Yeah. And there are treatments and options now that didn't exist 10 years ago. And I think of just in the news last week, I saw that they're working on reworking one of the nursing homes up in Williamstown that had been closed for a while. And now it's going to be turned into a recovery center. So, again, it looks like, you know, there are new resources being put to this problem where they hadn't been before, maybe not specifically, right?
Yeah.
There might have been a couple of rooms somewhere or a wing or something like that in an existing facility. And now it seems like there's increased attention being put to this issue. And obviously there's a need that needs to be filled and people that need to have options. I think of also the suboxone treatments and things that people have available to them. For a while, there was a lot of stigma on those. I think that has dissipated a little bit, right?
A little bit. Not enough.
Yeah. I wonder why. Because, again, what you're doing is you're treating someone's disease, right, with a medication. It's not all that hard to imagine that there's lots of medications that treat diseases. You know, I take a statin for cholesterol. You know, I'm not going to get stigmatized for that, I don't think.
And my kind of, you know, I laugh to myself, but my kind of is like somebody, you know, chugging down black coffee, you know, chain smoking a cigarette and saying to somebody, oh, you're not in recovery because you're on this medication.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, we all have our own different paths. Let's just leave each other alone if we can't help each other out, you know?
And the theory that Suboxone somehow is getting you high, it's not.
Yeah,
right?
Yes.
But and it might be a medication that you may need to take long term to keep your dependency on the opioids at bay,
and
that would be okay, right?
It gets you back
into society, gets you back with your family and your friends. What's not to like?
Yeah, and you know, and it's interesting because people who have been on like a medicated assisted treatment and are following it the way it should be done for years will share. Well, somebody, you know, ask me, when am I going to get off that? And it's like, you don't ask somebody who's on insulin, when are you going to get off insulin? Because it's helping to keep them alive and to keep them healthy. So to me, it's kind of like the same thing.
Yeah. We're speaking with Bob Dean here on Morning Drive this morning, talking about August being International Overdose Awareness Month. And there is a Overdose Awareness Day, which is happening the end of the month, but there's also an event on August 29th here in Pittsfield. It's a standout. Everyone is welcome to come, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Right at Park Square, 12 noon to 1 p.m. It's a nice short period of time. You can come out and show your support and raise awareness for this very important issue that we're talking about today.
And we'll have signs that people can hold up if they'd like. You can bring your own sign if you want. A lot of times people will bring a sign with the name of a lost one on it. But this is also a robust group of people that's going to be there. So there'll be, you know, there'll be a good boisterous crowd because, again, you know, you got to have hope.
Yeah.
By the way, the person that I mentioned earlier when I used to co-facilitate the support groups with, he was also on a medicated assisted treatment. And he would share at the group. He'd say, you know, some people say because I'm on this that I'm not in recovery or whatever. But then he would say, you can ask my wife and my mom what they think about that. You know, I mean, and they love having their son and their husband as he is today, as opposed to how he was not maybe 5 years ago.
Yeah. And so the Berkshire Harm Reduction Program, when did that start and what changes have you seen since some of the programs have been instituted? I think, again, of the Narcan distribution and some of those peak numbers in and around the pandemic have started to come down.
Yeah.
It's nice to see those numbers come down. Talk about some of the successes there.
So Berkshire Harm Reduction serves people in that place between never used, and between recovery and abstinence. So we are meeting people where they are that are actively using, and what we are trying to do at Berkshire Harm Reduction is reduce the harm of what they're doing. Mm. We're not trying to talk people out of things because if we did that, they wouldn't come in. Mm. So when people come in, we're able to collect from them their used syringes and give them new unused syringes, which is a tremendous health service because anytime a syringe is reused, it can damage the veins. Even a second time, it can begin to tear and damage the veins of that person. Mm. And if syringes are shared and somebody has hepatitis C, HIV, any STDs, any of that stuff, you're potentially sharing that as well. So doing the syringe exchange is a huge part of what we do. By the way, last year, 2023, we collected 532,000 syringes.
Mm.
So those are fine.
Those are the syringes that will not be left on the ground also, right?
Exactly. Those are the ones that are not going to be in playgrounds on the Esha Wiltacook Trail, parks, anywhere.
Yeah.
There's still going to be some out there, unfortunately. But, you know, and we can take syringes from anyone. It doesn't have to be somebody who's actively using an illegal substance. It could be somebody who's uses syringes for other things. They can just bring them in and we'll collect them. A lot of times people they've had a pet that's been on a medical program that, you know, they'll bring them in. So that's one of the
big things. It's a very specific kind of waste also, right? I mean, let's talk about that because you can't just throw them away in your garbage. There's sharps disposal, right?
They
have to be dealt with in a very specific way.
That's that, you know, you don't want putting them in the trash or anywhere where anybody's potentially going to get stuck with them. And by the way, if you do find a syringe out there, you can call Berkshire Harm Reduction, and if we can, we'll come over and we'll pick it up.
Well, that's really good to know.
Of it just to get them out of the out of circulation. But when people come in, we're also able, if they'll let us, to look at where they're injecting, and maybe offer them some suggestions, because a lot of times they might begin to have abscesses or things like that. You know, they're blowing out a vein and things like that. The other thing you want to talk about things that are controversial. Let's. the other things that we do, we can offer somebody a smoking kit. Because smoking an opioid is far less dangerous than injecting.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you think about it, like when you are smoking something, we talked about the cigarette smoker. Yeah. Remember when you first tried your first cigarette? What did you do? You coughed it out. That was your body saying, nope, or it's too much. You coughed it out.
Right.
If somebody's a drinker and say they have a setback and they start drinking again, what will they do as they start drinking? They'll throw it up. But when someone's injecting, it has no way to leave the body until it goes through the liver and through the urine. So it's there. And that's why injecting is so dangerous, because once it's in your system, it's going to be in there until it comes out. And if you've got too much, you've got an overdose.
Yeah.
Where somebody, is smoking, they'll do less each time, but plus they would cough it out. So just encouraging somebody, try the smoking kit. Maybe they'll inject less, maybe they'll even it out. And so that's one thing that, that we do to reduce the risk of what someone's doing. We also have a great hepatitis C program that we're able to test someone. And if they're positive and they want to begin the program, we can set up, I still call it Zoom, but I guess it's that teleconference with the doc.
Telehealth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not that sophisticated,
but we all know what Zoom is. So,
and then they can have the medication delivered to Berkshire Harm Reduction, so the person can pick it up there, and they'll get support from us as they're following the regimen. The other thing is, we don't require somebody to stop drinking or stop using before we start treating them for hepatitis C, because for many people that's impossible and it's impractical.
So basically, that way you're just scaring people away.
Yeah.
Right? You're saying if you're a zero tolerance abstinence policy or whatever, you're not going to help anybody at that point.
Punishment doesn't work.
Right.
Punishment, we remember that. Like whoever that guy was with the mice, that the thing went off, it would stay away from there as long as that adverse reaction was happening. But then you don't learn anything, by being punished, really, except you find another way.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that if somebody that's on the hepatitis C program with us, if they should not be around for a couple of weeks with the people we serve, that may tend to happen, and they come back in 4 weeks, if we can, based on what the medical, the doctor's saying, we'll get them right back on the program. Again, we're not going to say, nope, come back in a year because, you were bad, you went away for 4 weeks. It's like, we want to just meet somebody where they are and do whatever we can to try to help them at least knock out the hepatitis C.
Is hepatitis C a direct result of intravenous drug use? Is that really where the sort of crisis
there is coming
from?
A lot of the
sharing
with needles and stuff. And the with the potential blood from one person to the other if you're sharing and all of that. So
how hard is that for someone to? Will they always have hepatitis C, or will they be able to rid themselves of that at some point?
I shouldn't answer, but I think they will always have part of it within them. They would always be tested for it, but it wouldn't be active. And the thing about hepatitis C, the little I know, is it can lie dormant for a while, but it can do severe, severe damage.
Yeah.
And so to be able to take care of it at no cost to somebody in a non-judgment zone. And, when I go to certain places and I talk about all these things, if it's places where people are in recovery, there's almost always one or two people that will join in and then I let them take over and share their positive experience with.
Yeah, I would think that would be powerful, right? To be able to hear directly from a peer or somebody who has gone through it and hear their story and hear what worked for them, what didn't work for them,
what
struggles that they had, right? You must hear powerful stories
And that's why, again, with recovery, being in support groups or being in programs or being just having, a sponsor or making friends with people who have been through that and are maybe a little farther along on their journey than you, that can offer support. One thing I wanted to say, people say, well, you guys at Berkshire Harm Reduction, all you're doing is enabling. And my response to that is, yeah, we're enabling people to stay alive.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if our doors were shut, do you think people would go back home and would just not use? Or do you think they'd go back home and reuse a syringe and they wouldn't have Narcan?
Right.
And by the way, naloxone is like the generic name. Narcan's the brand name. So the way I describe it is, naloxone's like chocolate chip cookies. Narcan's Chips Ahoy. But it's like the only brand we have is the Narcan. There's one other one, but so I use them interchangeably.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and to your previous point, ignoring a problem has never made one go away, right?
Yeah.
By saying that you're enabling or whatever, it's like, well, this problem is not going anywhere. And, you know, I'd like to hear the critics come up with their solution, because you usually don't hear that. You usually don't hear the solutions from the critics. All you hear, it's easy to be a critic.
Yeah.
It's easy to lob all the criticism and not actually have a solution. Come up with a solution then, if this is a problem for you.
And I think, you know, that's a great point, Sean. And my experience has been that for a lot of people, that whole perspective, that whole coming up with a solution, all of that changes when you realize it's not them who have this problem. It's your kid.
Yeah.
Or it's your, you know, your grandkid, or it's your spouse. You know, and you realize, this is something that's, that is affect all.
Seems like it's just a lack of empathy in some ways, knowing that there but for the grace of God go I, if you will.
Yeah.
Put yourself in their position. It could be you. Could be your family. Could be somebody that you care for. And it's, as we've seen in the last 10, 15 years, can happen very easily and very quickly. So everyone is potentially vulnerable here.
And we've seen there's been an increase in people 65 and over who have had fatal overdoses from opioids. A lot of people are prescribed opioid medications. They should also be having Narcan prescribed or getting it from one of these boxes to have it. Because if you're taking an opioid, you should have Narcan, period. But a lot of times as we age and our bodies change, maybe we're not able to metabolize something. Maybe, we're double dosing inadvertently.
Right.
Maybe. But you're right. This can affect all of us.
Yeah, the prescribing really back in the 2010s was just a watershed moment, wasn't it? When those prescriptions started coming out, just flowing like water. It's like, oh, you have pain? Here, have some oxycodone. And that, luckily turned around. And I think the medical community realized what was happening.
Yep.
Probably the lawsuits didn't hurt either. But just the idea that maybe this isn't a good idea to flood the market with these opioids.
Yeah. I'm glad that we began to learn from that, because certainly, we relied on the medical world and what they were telling us.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying these things do not have negative side effects, which was not accurate. And as a result, a lot of people have suffered. A lot of people have died.
Yeah.
And, we just need to be aware that, now we have this situation. But I guess I have a lot of hope. I see a lot of good things with the sadness and with the challenges and the suffering. But I see people that are able to come through all this, and they're given back. And to me, that's so powerful.
And the fatality numbers are coming down.
Yes.
Right?
The last 2 years, we've got them down significantly. Mm. And we'll continue to do that as a community, as long as people are making wherever that naloxone, Narcan, naloxone. Period.
Yep, and not only the availability of that product to be able to save a life, but the attitudes that people have are evolving and changing, and that comes from conversations like we had this morning. Right. I would imagine even 10, 15 years ago, a conversation like this would have been much more uncomfortable, and probably uncomfortable for listeners as well.
Yes.
Didn't want to hear it, would turn it off. Right. And now I think we've gotten to the point where we can listen and we can understand, because, as you said, it might not be them the next time, it might be us or me.
Yes. And, to the business community, I ask you to reach out to us at Berkshire Harm Reduction. We've got more Nalox boxes. We'd love to have them in the supermarkets.
How can people get a hold of you to do that?
You got the right there on the back of the brochure. There's the Pittsfield Berkshire Harm Reduction. Call, ask for Bob. I'll get right back to you with Nalox boxes. There's no charge for the Nalox box. Berkshire Harm Reduction provides it, and we will stock it and restock it at no charge. So you're basically giving the customers who come to your store or whatever, your business is, you're offering free naloxone that otherwise they would pay $40 for.
Wow. And that phone number is Pittsfield address is you're on 42 Summer Street, Suite 201, and it's 447-2654. That's the number to call for Berkshire Harm Reduction. And so I'm holding up this little brochure here. But people can get a hold of you that way and make a difference. So, Bob, Dean, I want to say thank you again for being here this morning on Morning Drive. What a great conversation.
Thank you, Sean. Always appreciate the information.
And August being International Overdose Awareness Month, there is a standout on August 29th, a week from today, 12 p.m. to 1 p.m. at Park Square, everybody. So that's where you want to go to show your support and raise the awareness yourself. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Sean.
Take care. We'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your day.